So there's a great need for visualization, people doing visualizations within the area of data science, right? So the data science, is, you can kind of think of this as an umbrella on top of visualization. So visualization is an integral component of the data science pipeline.
You're listening to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary, here to deconstruct complex computer science topics bit by bit and explain what the tech is going on. In this episode, Kelsey and I talk to Usman Alim, a co-director of the Data Science and Analytics program at the University of Calgary. In our conversation, we are able to learn more about how he got into computer science, how he started doing research at UCalgary, and what some of his research was about. Okay, let's see what the tech is going on. Welcome back to the What the Tech podcast. We are here with Usman. He is the co-director of the Data Science and Analytics program at the University of Calgary. And as well, he is the director of the Visualization and Graphics group. So yeah, how did you get into computer science, Usman?
Oh, okay. That's a sort of a long journey. I was not a computer science undergrad. In my undergrad, I was a math major. Actually, so I started off in the United States, upstate New York, University of Rochester. So as a freshman there, U of R was really known, or I guess it still is really known for its optics program. So that's a very specialized branch of physics and engineering, I guess, that they have over there, where they also students also study lasers and lenses and, you know, lots of physics around light. So I was I went in as an optics student, but you know, after the first year or so, kind of realized that it was very engineering focused. I mean, there was a good mix of both theory and engineering, but I was kind of more inclined towards you know, like more of the theoretical stuff. I didn't quite like all of the experiments we had to do. It was quite heavily focused on experiments. So kind of from there, I kind of drifted towards physics, because physics was, you know, more theory focused, at least at the undergrad level. And as a physics major, you have to take a whole bunch of math courses. So I also ended up doing a major in math as well, right? So computer science and, physics and math, double degree. But towards the end of my undergrad, I kind of thought that there were some things that were done really well through computers. So I had no exposure to computers or programming up until, so I did have only one course in programming in my freshman year, but I didn't use that until probably my senior year. So there was no use of computers. This is like late 90s, right? So yeah, I mean, there were still tools available, compared to these days, of course, you know, so now we have just so many tools and resources available, software tools, libraries in any kind of discipline. But even at that time, there were a few, and I had my first exposure in my senior year in a lab course in physics, where we were doing some computational stuff. So I really enjoyed that. And that was sort of when I decided that I wanted to explore computer science a little bit more. But, you know, having a traditional degree in math and physics, transitioning to computer science wasn't straightforward. So I had to kind of find a program that will let me kind of bridge that gap. Because if you want to go into, I didn't want to do another undergrad, of course, in computer science. I wanted to do a master's degree. So I was looking for something like we have now, right? The data science program, which lets people transition. So at that time, I was trying to transition into this computer discipline, right? So that was sort of, you could think about it as sort of the data science of that era. So with background in math and physics, I transitioned over. I found this program there in Rochester, at Rochester Institute of Technology, where they had a bridge program where you had to take a whole bunch of undergrad courses for 1 year in a condensed fashion, and then they would let you into their computer science master's program. So I did a year's worth of bridging courses that included all of your traditional, you know, core computer science courses like algorithms, data structures, operating systems, some computer architecture. So got all of that exposure to the systems and the algorithmic side of computer science. And yeah, and that's how I got into computer science. Then went on to do a specialization in, since it was a master's program, thesis-based, specializing in computer graphics.
I was going to ask you a little bit more about what you focused on in your master's. And I think you mentioned you were a PhD candidate as well.
Yeah, after the master's, yes. So initially I went in as a master's student, kind of thinking that, you know, I'd stop after the master's. But at the master's level, there was just so much flexibility, freedom in doing things and choosing your topic of research. I really enjoyed that. I learned a lot. I also explored various topics ranging from like artificial intelligence, machine learning, computer graphics, a little bit of, some systems related things as well, but kind of focused more on graphics and AI, and kind of I was debating between the two and eventually found my home in the area of computer graphics, because I guess it was just my background in physics and math. And I saw that those were applied really nicely in computer graphics, because the computer graphics uses a lot of models that are physically based. So I really, really liked that. I could see that all of the physics that I learned as an undergrad, I could use it in this computer science degree. So I was doing all of this stuff around fluid simulations for visual effects, like, so kind of the stuff you would see in animated movies. You have these water simulations or fire and smoke and simulations, things like that. So that's what I was looking at in my master's, how that stuff is done. So my thesis was around the simulation of smoke. Really enjoyed working on that. Yeah. And then after that this was the master's, and then really enjoyed the computer science, decided to continue and apply to PhD programs, found a really nice program in Canada in Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, BC. So went on there and spent the next 6 years working in a lab there known as the Graphics Usability and Visualization Lab that had folks from a whole mix of disciplines that fall under the area of visual computing, right? So that includes vision, graphics, visualization, some human-computer interaction. So it was a very nice home, very nice mix of students and faculty where I did my PhD, focusing in sort of a cross between computer graphics and data visualization.
Very cool. I just want to jump in here and take a step back to your thesis. I'd love to hear more about how smoke is simulated in movies and in animation. I want to know a little bit more about the approach you took to, you know, figuring out how it works and, you know, how it does work.
Okay, so this is like 2003, 2004, around that time. So this is also from, I guess, if you look at the development of computer graphics and techniques, sort of a transition period where computer graphics was going from more of these ad hoc type approaches, right? So they're to more physically based approaches. So I guess previously, like in the 80s, 90s, a lot of it was inspired by, you know, traditional hand-drawn animation, because of course, in back, if you look at animations from the 60s, 70s, from that time period, everything was hand-drawn. And then it was moving over to computers. So they had still a lot of the practices that were used in the past there. But then people realized that, you know, you can really use computational algorithms for doing these things in a more physically based manner to get the more of the realistic look for these effects, whether it's smoke or fire. So, of course, this is something that's been studied in fluid dynamics for a very long time. And around that time, like late 90s, early 2000s, is when people started to utilize these physically based models coming from fluid dynamics in computer graphics. So like the process is very similar to the way they do it in computational fluid dynamics, which is, of course, is a much older field. But of course, in computational fluid dynamics, it's not about the look, right? It's about accuracy. They're studying the actual behavior of the fluid. Whereas in computer graphics, you're concerned more about how good it looks, whether it looks real or not. So there's also this rendering component. You have to get it to look right. You have to figure out a way that the modeling of the smoke, which is about how the smoke is moving. You have to also see how that ties in with how it's going to look. So there is also this rendering component that goes on top of that. So I was focusing more on the modeling aspect. So how to animate it, how to make it move. So there are Navier-Stokes equations that are used which are, you know, equations that are quite well established in the fluid dynamics community. But around that time, it was sort of a new thing in computer graphics. So people were looking at ways to simulate it, ways to solve these equations using, you know, grids. But it was very slow at that time. It had to be done offline, not like nowadays, right? You have a GPU in your computer and you can get these things in real time, right? In games, you would have these effects in real time. But at that time, it was all done offline. And sort of most of this was for these visual effects that are done in, not for real time. So stuff you would find in movies, where you have a lot of movies or animated movies or other types of movies as well that are using CGI, where there's just a lot of processing time that's devoted to getting these things to look right. So I was working on this sort of small scale simulations for smoke and solving them on a coarse grid, just comparing two different types of methods. So at that time, there were a couple of methods that were popular. Now, of course, there's many more. All of the fluid sim stuff has evolved a lot. And just physically based animation has come a long way in the past couple of decades as well. Yeah.
Very cool. What kind of considerations did you have to take into account when you were, you know, finding more about how to model these smoke effects and how these particles kind of move and how to simulate a realistic look?
Okay. So there were the two different types of approaches to this. One is more of this particle method, as you mentioned, where you are simulating the movement of particles. And the other method is more of this fluid as a continuum, as a density. So you're looking at not just individual particles, but sort of you can think about concentrations of particles, so fluid density, and trying to simulate how the density of the fluid is going to evolve. So I looked at both of those approaches and sort of did a comparison as to which approach is better in under which circumstances. Of course, there is no one size fits all kind of solution for these types of things. It turns out that, you know, if you go with a more of this traditional continuing type method, it's more stable, but it's expensive, right? You have to spend more computational resources. Whereas sometimes you do these particle type approaches, you know, they're very easily parallelizable and very easy to implement. So both have their pros and cons. So there was this particle versus density approach. And then there were also, for when you're modeling a particular type of fluid, you have to look at, you know, some of the more of those idiosyncrasies associated with the fluid there. With smoke, you have to look at the buoyancy, how it's going to interact with obstacles. So things like that are particular to smoke, right? But with other types of fluids, of course, you would also have those, but the methods we use are somewhat different. So for smoke, I had to look at temperature, how temperature affects the flow of smoke, how buoyancy affects the flow of smoke, how smoke is going to interact with obstacles and kind of make these plumes and swirls as it flows around. So some of those things I had to think about. Yeah, I mean, like this is a couple of decades ago, but it seems like I still have a pretty vivid memory of all of the stuff I did. Yeah.
You mentioned a few equations previously that are pretty popularized in the fluid dynamics world. Do these equations take into account those conditions that you just mentioned, buoyancy, temperature, those kind of things?
Yes. So Navier-Stokes are physically based. So they're actually like describing the dynamics of fluids. So there in fluids, there's this sort of three different levels at which you can model fluid. There is a sort of a macroscopic level, which is what the Navier-Stokes does. It's modeling the sort of the macroscopic or visible things, right? So things that you can easily measure, such as the fluid density. And then there is sort of a microscopic method, which is particle-based, where you are actually simulating not the aggregate behavior, but behavior of individual particles. And then when you model these individual particles and you want to get to something that you can actually display on your screen, you have to do an aggregation. So that aggregation step is sort of, you can think of it as a post-smoothing step that's applied. But there's also a layer in between that's sort of a hybrid, which is very popular nowadays, sort of mesoscopic methods, which kind of have, you can say the best of both worlds there. It's a combination of the two there that these methods employ. So there is different ways of incorporating these effects. such as temperature or other external forces that are influencing the behavior of the fluids. All of these models have ways to integrate these into the behavior of your fluid, yeah.
And is there any specific programs or coding languages that you utilized or that you learned that other people utilize when doing your thesis or currently in the world of animation and modeling?
So C++ is still sort of the language that's used a lot in the computer graphics community. My simulations were all written in C++. And C++ is something that I learned as one of those bridge courses that I mentioned. So one of the courses there was a C++ course. So use C++ to do all of the simulations. And for some of the rendering stuff at that time, and even now, OpenGL is used, which is your open graphics library for doing a lot of the rendering for computer graphics stuff. So this is more for real-time rendering. But so I was also experimenting with both real-time and non-real-time, sort of more physically-based type of rendering as well. Now there is lots of rendering algorithms that are available. Like all of the big studios have their own sort of in-house rendering rendering software packages that they use. Some of them are also open source. You can just download them, play around with them. So for a student in graphics who's focusing more on sort of the modeling aspects, they would just download one of these softwares, like Blender, for example, is a popular one. You just incorporate your models in Blender and render them. And Blender does just an amazing job. It's open source, so a lot of the state-of-the-art rendering algorithms, both modeling and rendering algorithms, make their way into Blender. And you'll find good implementations of that.
Yeah, it sounds like you did some very interesting work in your master's. So I was wondering, how did you end up working at the University of Calgary? What was that journey like from your PhD to work?
So I guess during the PhD, you get more focused on research. And you realize that this is something that you maybe want to do as a career. And so that's what happened. And my PhD was more on data visualization, which is in visualization, of course, you're also using a lot of graphics techniques. So my background was in graphics, but in data viz, I also found a very nice home there because I was able to use some of my graphics background, but also learn a lot about data, you know, now what we call data science. So this is like around 2008, you know, 2007, 2008, when I was doing my PhD, really getting into visualization. The term data science wasn't known at that time, but we were doing the same things, right? Kind of looking at the whole data pipeline. And so I really enjoyed the whole kind of a different way of utilizing my background in graphics in this context of data coming from various types of acquisition modalities, both from scientific simulations as well as data that's actually captured, you know, through measurement devices like medical imaging. So it was a very nice sort of a way to integrate all of my background and also some of the new stuff that I learned. So towards the end of my PhD, I saw a job opening here at the University of Calgary, which was exactly in this area, data visualization in this area of applying data visualization to oil and gas reservoir simulations. So I applied to this and I guess the rest is history, as to say, yeah. So here I am, yeah.
That's really neat, yeah. Do you still do research and work around oil and gas reservoirs then?
Yes. So off and on, I've been involved in that together with my colleague, Dr. Costa Sousa, who's quite involved in this. So we've had a couple of students together looking at different ways to visualize sort of multivariate aspects in these oil and gas reservoir simulations. So yeah, and we still have another ongoing project where we're looking at sort of integrating some machine learning approaches and some visualization approaches. Yeah, so there's still lots to be done. Yeah,
cool, very cool. I just wanted to bounce off of that. We know you are the director of the visualization and graphics group at U of C, and we understand that your goal is to focus on addressing fundamental issues in scientific visualization and computer graphics. I'm just looking to see if you can speak a little bit on how the group came to be and what are some of the projects you're focusing on right now within that group.
Okay, so that's what I call my group, the visualization and graphics group. that's sort of the two areas that represent my background. So how the group came to be, it's, you know, every faculty member will have some sort of a research group they're affiliated with. So when I was hired, I started my own group there, called it the Visualization Graphics Group. But I mean, that's not the only group doing the visualization and graphics stuff. There's also, you know, several other faculty members engaged in this area, sort of having different specializations, right? So if you, I don't know if you've been on campus lately, but if you, we are in math science, right? In the sixth floor of math science. So sort of there is a one wing there, which is all people doing all graphics stuff, right? Graphics and visualization stuff. And then on the other side, we have the people doing visualization interactions. Yeah, so lots of people doing this. My particular group is focusing more on both graphics and visualization topics. And as you mentioned, some of the fundamental aspects in these disciplines. So this is more along the lines of data representation ideas, data compression, doing interpolations from continuous data measurements. So some of these things are sort of central to when you're working with the data that is spatial. So some of these aspects are sort of the core things that you need to think about when dealing with data interpolation. How do you get a continuous model on top of discrete data? So that's sort of the fundamental aspect. So that's one project that we're looking at. That's sort of more on the fundamental side. But then also on some of the other aspects related to visualization is sort of visual representations, right? When you have data, how do you encode it? How do you get a visual representation of this data so that when a particular user is going to look at it, it's going to make sense, right? So that's sort of the fundamentals from a more of a visualization standpoint. So we've also done some projects there where we're looking at appropriate ways to encode data. Most of the time we're dealing with data in three dimensions and you're usually visualizing it on your computer screen. So, but recently I have another project with a student of mine where she's interested in looking at more of these immersive environments like virtual reality and coming up with appropriate ways of encoding this data visually. And also not just the visual encoding, but also the interaction aspect as well. So how do you interact with it? Because with these immersive environments, you have, you know, like the 6 degrees of freedom controllers that are available to you. There's tracking that's there. So you just have a very rich environment where you can interact with data, right? As compared to your traditional point and click interfaces using the mouse, which makes it very cumbersome when dealing with data that's three dimensional. So some of these immersive environments are sort of really fertile grounds, I guess, for this type of exploration. Yeah. So that's another, we have another project in that area.
So you mentioned that one of your focuses is figuring out appropriate ways to encode data and displaying the data to individuals on their computer screens. Do you mind just going into a little bit of your findings so far? What ways have you found appropriate to encode data and how do you display that to individuals?
Yeah, so this is a project with a PhD student who graduated a couple of years ago. Alan Rocha, he also works here locally in Calgary. And he was looking at ways to display in visually data on surfaces in three dimensions. So you need some sort of a canvas on which, if I go with that analogy, right? So for visualizations, you need a canvas on which you can paint your visualizations, right? If you go with that analogy. So in traditional sort of two-dimensional displays, or 2D data visualizations, that's your computer screen. You have a flat canvas and you do your visualizations on that. But when you're dealing with three dimensions, then we can also do this on surfaces. So these are surfaces that would be embedded in three dimensions. Maybe like you can think of a very simple example would be the surface of a sphere, for example, right? So that's maybe there is some data associated with the sphere. I mean, like your very good example of that would be your geospatial data, the data associated with the globe. So this could be, you know, precipitation, temperature, population densities, things like that. And when you want to show this on the surface of the globe, you have a spherical surface that you're dealing with. And then there are, so here the challenge is if you have several variables that we want to display, as I mentioned, like you have temperature, pressure, population density, let's take those for example. And if you want to display those in a unified way, right? In the same display. So how to do that is what Alan was looking at. And again, the inspiration came from this idea of layering as painters do it, right? So when they're painting on canvas, they would paint a background layer, then some foreground layers and then things that go in the front, right? So there's this layering idea. One of your data variables can go as a background layer. But of course, you have to think about what would make for a good background layer. So some of this, in this reservoir example, he used sort of the rock type, you know, so within reservoirs, there's different types of rocks. So this is information that's not changing that much. And you could do a very nice sort of a background, because you don't want a very busy background, right? So you have to choose this appropriately. So there's this encoding process, visualization design process that's involved there. So he used the rock type as a background layer. And then some of the things that are varying more. So this could be your, in the reservoir context, your water saturation, oil saturation. This is the stuff that they care about, you know, where oil is located, where, how to displace it from an injection well to a producer well. This would be information that's changing very rapidly. So this would go as a foreground layer, but you do not want to lay it out in a way that it takes up the entire canvas, the entire surface. You want to focus more on the trends and so sort of the important aspects. So some processing needs to be done there to extract those relevant, important features and then display them in the foreground. So this is sort of that. The decal maps is the term we use for this. And again, the idea is that you're sticking decals on a surface, like you would do, like if you have decals that you would stick on a car or some other model that you have in the real world. So it's the same sort of idea, is that you come up with your visual representation, and then we have this process of pasting this onto that surface, of course, all on that virtual surface. So that's what decal maps does. And then there's this idea of layering that we're able to use to encode several variables in the same visualization.
Oh, that's very interesting. So I know you've been doing computer science now for quite a few years, and you've mentioned quite a few different areas, I guess, within data visualization. I know you mentioned simulations and virtual reality, human-computer interactions. So how kind of have you seen this space within computer science evolve over the last few years? And what are kind of some of the biggest differences? What stayed the same?
Okay, so I could speak to the area of data visualization, since that's sort of the area that I've been involved with in terms of research for the last decade or so, or a little over a decade. So this was an area that was born out of computer graphics in sort of early 90s, right? So there was no formal area in computer science known as visualization. This is something as data became very abundant or started to become, you know, more common, people realized that there was a need to have ways to present this, because visualization as a discipline is old, right? So this is not computer-based visualization, but this traditional visualization, right? So people have used visual representations for centuries, right? So we can think about our language, right? Like your letters, symbols, that's also in a broad sense, a way to convey information in a visual manner, right? So if you're reading, you have symbols that you're looking at, but those symbols have a meaning. So that's what visualization is really about, is taking some data, coming up with an encoding for it, and then that encoding should have some sort of a meaning, which sometimes is very intuitive, and sometimes people need a little bit of training to decipher what it means, but essentially that's what visualization is in a nutshell. But so around the 90s, computer-based algorithms started becoming popular, and of course there was an area in computer science that was dealing with producing visuals for the computer screen, that was computer graphics. So there was sort of a community within computer graphics that was really interested in how to apply graphics techniques to data for the purpose of visualization. So that's kind of how the field of data visualization was born. And then over time it evolved, right? So initially it was a lot of these ideas coming from computer graphics that were being applied, but then people saw how interdisciplinary this area really is, right? So some of the stuff I talked about, how symbols can convey meaning. So this is something that people study in other disciplines, right? Like linguistics and semiotics, right? Those are disciplines where people are studying symbols. And then there's also our perception. How do we perceive information? How do we perceive visual information? How to encode, right? So this is something that people in psychology, in perception, in cognitive science have been studying. So over time, then more of these areas started getting integrated into the area of data visualization, and it really started to become a very interdisciplinary sort of a field. And then we started seeing these separate areas started evolving in data visualization. So there was this area called scientific visualization, which is really concerned with techniques that are focused more towards spatial data. So this is some of the data that I mentioned, right? So it could be fluid dynamics data sets, medical imaging data sets, where information that you're trying to visualize has a spatial dimension associated with it. It's kind of inherent in that data. But then there are all of these other data sets that people are interested in visualizing, which do not really have a spatial meaning, right? For example, like textual data, or if you're trying to think of Twitter feeds, for example, or a document, right? And you're trying to make some sense out of what's in that document, how many words are occurring, what concepts appear in that document. That's not really spatial information. So there's a lot of, I guess, flexibility involved there in how you encode that. And then another area of visualization emerged. It's called information visualization, which is really interested in looking at ways to encode this type of data and how to visually encode it, how to interact with it. And then I guess over the next few years or so, this is sort of like the first decade of the 2000s, we had sort of these two clear separations in the area of visualization, scientific visualization and information visualization. And then a third area emerged where the role of interaction was becoming more and more apparent, right? So visualization is not just about producing static visualizations, but people should be able to interact with it and change it and run queries on your data sets and produce other visualizations as a result so you can get more insight into your data. So this is the area of visual analytics, right? So analytics is a very common term now. Within the field of visualization, an area called visual analytics kind of appeared in the late 2008, 2009, around that time, and it became popular. And so this is also the time when I was finishing my PhD. And then over the last decade, what I've seen is that, I guess this is something that happens in academia, is like people branch off into different communities and then the communities start to separate. And that's kind of something that happened. Sometimes doing very similar things, but in different communities. And they're still coming together. So the data visualization community meets annually in a, I mean, there's several conferences, but there's a big one called, it has had several names, right? So previously it was called Visualization, then Viz. So that's the conference where all of these people, these different sub-communities came together. And then people started realizing that the overall goal is still the same, is data visualization. So now there's a kind of a push towards integration. And now what's happening now in this community is that people are coming together again. And rather than having these separate sub-conferences, they will be all submitting to the same conference. So that's sort of the evolution of visualization. And some of it, I guess, is also sparked by the way the data science field is emerging. So there's a great need for visualization, people doing visualizations within the area of data science, right? So the data science, is, you can kind of think of this as an umbrella on top of visualization. So visualization is an integral component of the data science pipeline. So there's also a need to kind of have this unified, you know, when outsiders come in and want to look at what's happening in the field of visualization, they don't want to see all of this separation. There should be sort of an integrated approach to this. And that's what the community is going towards right now.
Okay, yeah, for sure. So yeah, you've mentioned that it's very interdisciplinary and that there's now becoming more integration. So where do you see this integration happening and kind of, I guess, where is visualization headed in the future, in your opinion?
So there is a lot of integration now between I guess so. Some of the interaction aspects and the visualization aspects are quite tightly integrated. A lot of people doing work in those areas, they would be submitting to, for example, human-computer interaction conferences and also visualization conferences. And then you will also see some of this integration. So that's looking more at the spatial data. We'll see that a lot of this data is coming from simulations that run on these giant clusters. So you'll see a lot of people are kind of not just publishing in visualization venues, but also in venues related to like high performance computing, supercomputing. So there's also some integration there as well. And now with machine learning, right, a lot of advances there. We see that people in visualization are using a lot of machine learning approaches as well. So in kind of two distinct ways, right? So there is people using machine learning to automate some of this process. A lot of data viz was kind of trial and error, it still is. Like you try different things and see how they work. But the people are trying to somehow automate this. and trying to incorporate more of these learning approaches so that, like, you, as an example, you would give a data set to this algorithm and it would apply some machine learning to figure out, you know, here are the important things that you should visualize, right? So some of this exploration aspect would be automated, but you still want the human in the loop. You don't want this to be a total black box, right? That's sort of a big criticism of the way these algorithms work, is sometimes people don't quite know how they came to a particular conclusion. So there is another, I guess, area within a visualization, which is focused on looking at how these machine learning algorithms come to make decisions. So it's kind of using visualization to uncover the process that, for example, an artificial neural network is going to follow to make a decision, right? So that's sort of another distinct way visualization is used within the field of machine learning. So going forward, I'd see that we'd have more of these automated approaches that are utilizing some machine learning ideas, more approaches coming from statistics, for example. People are paying more attention to that. And that's, again, I think because of this tight connection between data science and data visualization, more of these statistical approaches are making their way into the visualization community now. People are applying more statistical concepts and are trying to be a little bit more rigorous with their evaluation methodologies. Also conveying uncertainty with visualization. So a visualization is not just, you know, if the data that you're visualizing has some limitations associated with it. If you say, for example, there's measurement error or there's some uncertainty associated with some prediction, you want to also convey that. So some of these quantification of uncertainty comes from the statistics community, which people in visualization are now incorporating to come up with appropriate encodings to show this uncertainty in these visualizations, right? So, and another area which I think is quite fascinating is immersive analytics, immersive visualizations, where we have just a very rich interaction space. You know, sometimes you see these in sci-fi movies, kind of, you know, your actor is kind of moving things around on these immersive kind of displays. And so that's, you know, not too far-fetched now. I mean, we can do that. And you can put on your headset and you can play around with these virtual data sets. You can grab them, move them around, you know. So there's all sorts of interactions people are looking at to help with this data exploration process. So I think we'll see some of those, like, fairly rich kind of immersive interfaces emerging as well. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I just have one final question. You mentioned that data visualization in your line, so 3D visualization of data, is pretty interdisciplinary. And you yourself didn't necessarily start in computer science, you started in math and physics. If there was an undergraduate student or even a master's student listening and they were doing math or physics or, you know, whatever different scientific field involving math, and they were interested in what you were saying, how would you recommend them going about getting into the field of data visualization?
So, yeah, this is a tough question, I think, because data visualization is so interdisciplinary that you could find multiple pathways into it. So people can come from a very non-math background and they'll see plenty of opportunities within data visualization in design, for example. You know, so that's sort of the great thing about this field, is that this field has so much to offer. And so if somebody's coming from more of a math background, I suspect they would be interested maybe in some of those mathematical approaches that are used in the field of visualization. So these are, you know, perhaps these are things related with uncertainty quantification and this tight integration between mathematical models and visualizations. So, and by that, what I mean is that sometimes the data that you're getting has some inherent model that's modeling that data. It could be like a machine learning model, could be more of a physically based or sort of a mechanistic model or partial differential equation based model that's describing this data. So if somebody has that background where they can really understand that model, then I think that's really a sort of a win-win situation, because they know the model and they know what's important in that model, what things would influence that model, sort of some of the parameters that are associated with that model. So they could get into that area. As fundamentals, of course, like everyone working visualization needs to know some of the fundamentals. So some of those ideas around visual encodings, how visualizations convey meaning. Those are some of those fundamental aspects in visualization. So anyone interested in visualization should take a course in visualization, right? So we offer several courses here in our department, right? So there's an information visualization course that will cover this stuff. Within the data science program also, we have some courses, right, in the data science minor and also in the professional stream where we talk about some of these ideas. So to cover some of those fundamental aspects of visualization. Yeah. And it's a computer science field, right? So you have to be good at programming, because you would be working with either, depending on at what level you work at, right? So there are some libraries that are available. You could just use them. But if you really want to dig into some of the fundamental aspects where you want to come up with your own visual encodings, then you'd have to work at a lower level, right? So you would, of course, be very good at programming and using some of these libraries to come up with your own encodings.
And if I was an undergraduate student looking for a research position for the summer or something, do you hire undergraduate students as research interns?
Yeah, I do. I'm like every year, maybe one or two students. Sometimes they're hired, paid through like a research grant. Sometimes they would also be paid through one of our undergraduate research experience opportunities, like the NSERC research experience. They have a program. And then there is also one that's run by the University of Calgary, right? The PURE program. And I've also had students, international students, come through programs like MITAC or the Science Without Borders, right? So there's plenty of opportunity to engage in research. And I'm always, you know, if somebody's interested in this, I'm always willing to chat. And there's definitely positions available or projects to be worked on for sure.
Cool, sweet. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Usman, for coming on the show. It was awesome to get to learn more about visualization and some of the work that you do at the University of Calgary. So it was very nice meeting you.
Hey, What the Tech listeners. Thanks for joining us for this great conversation with Usman. We hope you learned as much as we did. Thank you once again to Usman for joining us and explaining to us his work. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at @UofC_CPSC for the latest UCalgary computer science events and updates, and follow this podcast wherever you may be listening. Thanks for joining us to hear what the tech is going on.